Bibles, if you would, to Esther chapter 2. We are continuing our study of the book of Esther. Let's read the first few verses here in chapter 2. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Then the king's servants that ministered unto him Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, Let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Higgi. Must be related to John Higgi. I don't know, maybe not. The king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. Now in this chapter overall, we have the crowning of Esther, but in verses 1 through 4, we have a new queen sought in the kingdom. Now, between what happened in chapter 1 and now in chapter 2, we find that there are some important developments that occur in this second chapter of Esther. We're introduced for the first time to the two most prominent characters in the book, Esther and Mordecai. The king thinks the choice of Esther, if you read this carefully, he thinks it's all of his own volition, of his own will, and it's his wisdom. He doesn't realize he's a heathen. He doesn't understand the sovereignty of God. He doesn't acknowledge the sovereignty of God. He doesn't know that the king's hand is in the heart, the king's heart is in the hands of the Lord, and he turneth it whithersoever he will, like the rivers of water. And in actuality, he's in the hands of God. And God miraculously is working out his own sovereign purpose and pleasure. To me, it's one of the most amazing accounts in all of Scripture that shows the providence of God working in a miraculous way, and in this case, literally saving the future of the entire nation of Israel, and ultimately the line through which Messiah would come. Because as we go through the book, if Haman would have got his way entirely, every Jew would have been exterminated. There's always been Jew haters. There's always been those who have sought to eliminate God's elect people. And this is no This is true in ancient times. It's true today. But just when you think Israel, the Jewish nation, is done for, God continues to preserve them. I mean, it is a miracle. I say this all the time. How in the world could such a poor, despised, persecuted people who were scattered all over Europe, how could they be brought back into that little sliver of land, be recognized as a nation in 1948 after many years of being dispersed, and then all of the hatred that's broiling in the Middle East with all the nations that surround Israel and all the Muslims and the radical Islamists that want to exterminate that nation. And sadly, we got a lot of politicians in America that hate Israel, that hate the Jew. But you know what? You cannot defeat the purpose of God. Hard as men may try, God still has a reason why He's preserving the nation of Israel. But again, it's amazing. Think about this. Out of all the young women, I mean, they gathered the finest they could find out of the 127 provinces of this vast kingdom and population. Out of all of those that were brought, a Jewish girl named Esther, or Hadassah, would be chosen as the king's bride and queen. How does that happen? God. Now in verses 1 through 4, we see that a new king is sought. Now, it was the third year of Ahasuerus that Vashti was demoted from her position as queen. Verse 3 of chapter 1. In the third year of his reign, he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and princes of the provinces being before him. That occurred in the third year of his reign. Now, Esther was not crowned queen until the seventh year of his reign. You see that in chapter 2 and verse 16. And the king, so Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. So, approximately 4 years had passed in this Persian kingdom without a recognized queen. Now, if you read secular history, you find that Xerxes, Ahasuerus, was absent from Shushan during these 4 years because of ongoing wars with Greece. And he returned to Shushan after he had been defeated by the Greeks. Now, 4 years on the battlefield, and after having 4 years to think of his foolish, immoral, wicked behavior that led to the demotion of Vashti, I think the king's anger must have cooled. He probably started missing having a queen, having his main woman. Because back then, these Persian kings had harems, which is a vile way to live when you when you really think of it. It's just wicked. But I believe that men desire and women desire a real relationship with someone that they love and trust. And I think that's how he felt about Vashti. That's natural. And so he probably wanted to have her back, but because of the unalterable nature of the laws of the Medes and the Persians, once he decreed it that she was banished and that she was not going to be queen, she couldn't be brought back. So the advice of the servants to the king here is recorded in verses 3 and 4. In verses 2 and 3, and then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Hege. Is it Hege? Hege? I'll have to consult Alexander Scorby on that. The king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So you have the advice of the servants recorded here. A new queen is to be sought for in the provinces. And they were looking for the choicest and most beautiful young virgins that were to be gathered to Shushan the palace, where they would be kept in the house of women, where the place where 300 to 400 of the king's concubines were kept. Basically, it was a harem. And it was common in ancient Eastern countries where the God of Israel and his law was not known. Even the kings of Israel adopted some form of this. I mean, Solomon had, I don't know the exact number. Was it 300 wives and 700 concubines? It's... Huh? 300, 700. All right. It's just bothered me. And I'm sure the Lord's going to explain it to me when I get to heaven. It's always bothered me that the writer of the Book of Wisdom was so dead wrong when it comes to marriage and rearing children, even though his words tell another story. I mean, you can't get a better book than Proverbs to tell you how to look for a wife or look for a man to be your mate, how to raise your children, a work ethic, all of that. Inspired by God. God inspired Solomon, who was not the best example. God just overrules. But it's always been something that's puzzled me, and I just put it in that category that it's the sovereignty of God. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, and the things which are revealed belong to us and to our children. I don't know why God chose Solomon to write all of Proverbs, but God does. And so I'm going to learn from what is revealed. But still, does anybody else ever think about that? Because here's how I think of it. I think it's immoral. I think it's ungodly to have a harem of women. It's wicked. Now, You know what further complicates this and makes it more evil? Is these young virgins that they gleaned and gathered throughout the country, throughout the provinces, throughout the kingdom, they had no say in the matter. Their parents had no say in the matter. They just came, and whoever they determined that would be a good prospect for queen, they just plucked them and took them to Shushan. That's wicked. This is how depraved mankind is. It's how evil the heart of man is. To satisfy his own lusts and sinful desires, this king had the power to take whatever he wanted from whoever he wanted. Sadly, it's pretty much been that way when people ascend to power. They do what they want and what profits them. And they have little concern for the people that they damage and hurt along the way. We're seeing it in our country, and it's been this way for years. And it's sad. It's wicked. They were brought to the king by constraint. You know, there's a lot. Now, it may not be this way, exactly this way today, but you realize something that is rarely ever mentioned in our country, or around the world for that matter, is sex trafficking, where young girls are being targeted and taken and forced into sex slavery. I think by October, we're going to have over 2 million illegals who have entered our country. It's never happened before in 1 year. And a lot of those are being trafficked. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but out of 2 million, I guarantee you that there are pretty girls that are being culled out and sold into slavery. Much probably done by the drug cartels. It's just another way to steal and pillage. And there, you know what? Our government is doing relatively nothing about it, which tells me that maybe they're in on it. Maybe they're getting kickbacks monetarily from drug cartels and from sex trafficking. So, oh, come on, you can't say, I can say it. Men are wicked. They're immoral. And it doesn't matter whether they have an R or a D or an I behind their name. They were brought, and I have to believe that they were, these people, these young girls, many of them were probably brought against their will. Can you imagine a 14-year-old girl and somebody knocks on your door, says, we want to see your daughters, and they bring out a 14-year-old girl who's beautiful and fair to look upon. We want her. For what? We want to try her out, be one of the king's concubines. We're going to bring her to Shushan, the palace. What if he objected? What if dad objected? They'd kill him. This is when there is absolute power. in tyranny. You just dispose of people that oppose you. Can you imagine how fearful a 14-year-old girl would be? Having to leave her family to go to a place she's never been and be prepared for sexual activity that she's never engaged in. You say, well, these are touchy subjects. This is reality. This is what was happening. This is how wicked mankind is. They will traffic young girls. And now, with all the perverts, they'll traffic young boys too. Sick. So if they would have said, no, you can't have my daughter, or if they would have tried to conceal their daughters, they would have been slain. They would have been killed. Many of the customs of ancient empires were cruel. They were barbaric. Young women had no choice concerning whether or not they were to be concubines of the king. Again, imagine the heartache and emotional distress that was bound to exist within the hearts of parents and daughters alike. Well, I thought I'd get a lot farther along today. That's page one. We'll pick this up next week and see where Mordecai and Esther are introduced.